It's the Steve Rosenblum and Mike Esposito 4th of July Extravaganza on 670 The Score.
As a 224 texter notes, star-spangled suckage. Welcome in. Welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. We're in for Mully and Haw today. Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score. We're on to 11. Mark Brody will take over then and bring you up to the Cubs game. So this reminder, the Cubs continue their series against the Brewers. They do that today, pregame at 2:35 with first pitch at 3:10 on the Score and the Infinity Cubs radio network. Also, did you know you can hear Cubs games on your smart speaker? Just tell your device to play 670 The Score. And if you do, you'll hear our next guest. Joining us on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, is baseball guru Bruce Levine. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. By the way, this, morning, this update, the Cubs just walked another Brewer. And it's still Wilson Contreras' fault. So what you saw yesterday with them, they took a 6-0 lead. They blew a 6-0 lead. They lost 8-6 to the dreaded Brewers. And you're hearing talk of London contributing to fog and pain and fatigue and stuff like that. And Nick Madrigal goes down. And so can you paint a happy picture for us, Bruce?
Yes, by the 1st of August, you will have new players. You will have some of these very good veteran players going elsewhere to bring you back more of the future of the Chicago Cubs. And I think it's pretty much locked in. You know, when Carter Hawkins talked to the media last week, he talked about the fact that we will add, if we continue to play the type of baseball that we had played in June, up until the London series, and that we intend on adding to that if we do. Well, they haven't. You know, what is it, 1-8? So from that perspective, I think it's pretty clear that some of the guys that have contributed to one of the better Junes for the Cubs, a month where they actually played over 500, will be going elsewhere to bring you back some players of the future that can hopefully make this a more solid team, a team that can't compete every year for the next 4 or 5 years. I think that's really what Cub fans should keep their eye on. I know it's disappointing to hear that they might not add initially to trying to win this year, but it might turn out that in this clunky division of the Central Division in both leagues, even if you subtract and add young players, you still might be in competition because the division isn't great.
But Bruce, they added young players in the Darvish when they quit on the season in the Darvish trade. They added young players who I don't know. They're still a Dairy Queen as you do after Little League games, and I haven't seen them act like a big market team. That and you're talking about trading. If you trade Stroman, don't you need to go get another Stroman?
Yeah. Oh, well, you want to get the really good young pitching from somebody. Look, if you trade Stroman or you go ahead, you trade Bellinger somewhere that you can pick up another player. You trade Gomes if somebody needs a catcher. You know, for the last couple months, you make some stealth moves. I mean, look, can you afford to be the Chicago Cubs in this division right now, hoping that you're a contender for winning the division? Can you afford to get nothing for Stroman? That's my question to you, Steve and Mike. Can you afford to get nothing for him? Because you know he's going to become a free agent, and your odds of signing him are probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 to 1, considering what other offers will be for him on the open market.
Do they know they're the Cubs? Do they know do they know they have money? Do they know they're a big market team?
Yeah, throwing money at it is really not the answer, is it?
Well, it is if you got a guy who's pitching like that. If he's in the top 7 in the league in ERA and WAR and fielder independent pitching, you know what you got there.
Yeah.
He apparently survived pitch lab Whereas they paid money for Jameson Taillon and they ruined him. And I don't know why they ruined him. Why would they want to ruin him?
Steve, are you going to throw 6 or 7 years at Marcus Stroman at age 33?
Well, I don't. Everybody thought you were going to do that for Chick Corea, who's playing shortstop, and I keep calling
him Carlos Correa.
Yeah, and you know, you fight, so you throw bigger money for shorter years.
It's not. Spending money is not the answer. Being smart about how you spend your money is.
Stroman's smart.
Stroman
was smart, but what was the contract? It was for a 29-year-old guy. It was a 3-year contract. That was a smart move. They've gotten a lot out of it this year. Last year there was injury, and you know, was a little bit clunky. But the reality is, he's a really good pitcher on a team that's really not quite ready to win in their division. And you know, they might be able to compete this year and be around 500, something like that, and maybe be there with the rest of the division that's not very good. But from the perspective of what do you want to do with this franchise, you know, it's incumbent upon Hoyer and Hawkins to try to build something that's sustainable. So far, they have not been able to do that, and that is the goal.
Bruce, this is starting to remind me, and it hadn't. Listen, they were riding high before the or coming home from London, I should say, even losing the last game there. That Stroman pitched did not dampen the enthusiasm for the Cubs after their hot stretch, but they've only won once since then, and it's starting to remind me of, I guess it would be 2 years ago when they had the big losing streak and then the big trade-off of all of the World Series pieces. I know Cubs fans certainly hoped that was not coming, but that certainly looks like what's happening.
Right, and it is, you know, it is disappointing. I'm not being matter-of-fact about it because I'm happy about it. I thought the Cubs would be more competitive this year. I think they have been. They've been a more Steve, no matter what you say, you have to say they're a more interesting team. The adding, you know, the shortstop up the middle, adding Bellinger, you know, adding some pitching. You know, Taillon hasn't worked out, certainly. The bullpen has gotten a little bit better over the last month or so. Not so much the last week, but it's a more interesting team to watch. Okay, I know you're going to say, well, we're not paying all this money just to watch a more interesting team muddle around and play close to 500 baseball. But the fact is, if you look around Major League Baseball right now, how many teams really impress you as a team that's, you know, built to win? You look at probably 5 or 6 teams in Major League Baseball. The rest you can throw in the same container, and they're pretty much the same team right now. Are the Cubs going to be a championship caliber team by the moves that they're going to make here at the deadline? Well, you hope so down the line here, but you're going to need a center fielder. You're going to need a catcher. Okay, if Amaya is your catcher of the future, he's got to catch most of the games in the second half. You're going to need a third baseman. You're going to need a first baseman. You don't have those things right now. Is Morrell your everyday third baseman of the future? Play him there. If he can catch the ball once in a while, that would be great.
Yeah.
I rhetorically answered no to your question while you were talking.
Right. Is Mervis your first baseman in the future? The slower bat that we saw at the beginning of the year says not right now. So they're still totally in rebuild mode. Okay, they have some really good pieces at second and short. Okay, you have some good young pitching. You have Steele. You're hoping that your bullpen continues to get better. You're hoping some of the guys you sent to the minor leagues who are part of your bullpen rebound and can be used in the second half. But there is still a lot of rebuilding to do for the Chicago Cubs. It's a better team. It's a better product. But it's not ready to win at this point.
Hey, Bruce, in your opinion, what is going on? I mean, the recent neck thing, notwithstanding, with Seiya Suzuki, because the production just hasn't been there from him.
Yeah, you know, he's a hard player to figure out because in Japan, he was more of a power hitter. He hit for power. It was similar to Fukudomi, if you remember back when they signed him and they said, well, he was a guy that hits 25 home runs in Japan. Well, it doesn't always equal out when you move to the United States. lot of the Japanese players' power doesn't really equate to what they did in Japan. And right now, they're still waiting for some slug out of Suzuki. They haven't seen it yet. He shows signs of being a really good player. He just hasn't consistently been there. Some of it's been due to injuries. Some of it's been to getting used to the league. I think he should be used to the league now and used to the pitchers. I think this second half is a big deal for Seiya Suzuki and what type of player we're going to see the next couple of years with the Chicago Cubs.
Talking baseball with baseball guru Bruce Levine of The Score and the co-host of Inside the Clubhouse, heard Saturdays 52 weeks a year from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on this here radio station, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. On the other side of town, there's Lucas Giolito pitching today. They need him to pitch like Lucas Giolito. He's heard the trade rumors just like everybody else. And he says, no, I don't want to go. I want to stay here. And in a quaint spasm of old-time thinking, he's loyal to the Sox because they were loyal to him when he sucked. He's like such a mensch, Bruce. I don't, whatever it costs, the Sox don't like to do this, but that's a guy I pay for on the field, off the field, for being a front-facing part of your organization. I love this guy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because normally I'd say, well, you know, if he's a good teammate and he does produces on the field, that's good enough. But with the Chicago White Sox, I agree with you. Marketing, you know, guys that are people that, you know, want to be with the White Sox and are good spokesmen for the team, I think it's essential. I think a player like Lucas Giolito transcends just, okay, he's a good pitcher that we should retain. You need marketing on the south side of Chicago. You need players that are likable. I think a lot of the other Latin American players are likable, but they don't communicate to the point of being relatable to everybody every day. So from the marketing standpoint, I think Lucas Giolito has been your lead guy for a long time. He's, as you said, he's a mensch. He's a guy that thoroughly enjoys communicating to the fans, through the media, about what he does, about what the team does. I would like to see them extend him. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if he's actually looking forward to free agency or not. But from all indications, those are the type of guys you'd like to keep. He's had an up-and-down career. There's no doubt about it. But, he's pitched pretty well this year. I think he's still young enough that you'd like to hold on to him. I don't think you have to sign him to a 6 or 7 year contract. I don't think that's necessarily Lucas Giolito right now. But pitching being what it is, he might get that somewhere else.
Bruce, we talked about this a little on Saturday morning, but coming off of the winning the last two games against the Angels in that series, and then going into Oakland to face the worst team record-wise in baseball, the A's, a team with a lot of guys that our AAA players or 4A players, whatever you want to call them, right? And then coming out and losing that series, not only that, but you had a game where you had your proverbial ace in Dylan Cease, a guy who was magnificent last year, second in the Cy Young voting last year. To lose that game and then the series, they came back to take the finale, but that's got to be a demoralizing one for the Sox. I want to get your opinion on Dylan Cease, though, because... And I'm sure if there were an easy answer, the White Sox would have figured it out already. But what do you see when you look at Cease? Because he's just not the same guy.
Yeah, he just doesn't have the command that he had before. Remember, you know, the stuff has always been, you know, in the 95 percentile of major league pitchers. You know, the fastball and certainly the slider. You know, he's one of the top pitchers stuff-wise in the game. As far as his command and being able to you know, pinpoint like he did last year, hasn't been able to do that this year. There's been signs of it, and he's certainly has the same stuff, but he hasn't been the same guy. So I don't know where that's come off the tracks. You know, I know Katz has worked with him. I know the pitching people have worked with him. It just hasn't been the same. The other part of it is once in a while, you know, like on Sunday, you have to score enough runs to, you know, to support a pitcher when he doesn't have his best stuff, and he's going to give up 3 or 4 runs, and that's going to be okay if he pitches six innings and gives up three or four runs and you score five or six. The White Sox haven't been able to do that consistently, and that's been the biggest problem for them this year is their offense is sporadic, and outside of the home run ball and Luis Robert, you know, they haven't done anything consistently out there. I don't know what it is other than the fact that they need some different type of players there to go along with the very talented players they have. You know, Tim Anderson's still considered one of the top talents in baseball. Moncada injured again this year, considered one of the top talents in baseball. You have Eloy Jimenez, one of the top talents in baseball. So some or one or two of these guys will probably need to be traded and move on to some different people and some different parts. The Tim Anderson thing, you hate to say that one player, you know, controls, you know, what they do on offense. As he goes, they go. Well, it had been that way with Tim Anderson up till the middle of 2022, and it just hasn't been that since, whether it's injury or off-the-field things that he's had a difficult time dealing with. He was the face of your team. He was the energizer of your team. He's not any of that right now. And you don't like to blame a whole team's failure on offense on one guy, but he is certainly a big part of that equation.
Well, he wasn't Aaron Judge, but he had that effect. His absence had that effect on the team. When Judge leaves and the Yankees go, oh, wait, we have to do this? Wasn't he supposed to do that for us? And I agree that he's had that kind of he's been that kind of leader. He's had that kind of effect on this team. And yet it seems so little has changed. It changed the manager. He's brought nothing to this team. They're not smarter on the bases. They're just as dumb. They're not better in the field. They're just as ham-handed. Aside from Luis Robert and maybe one other hitter, they're undisciplined at the plate. The manager hasn't instilled this idea like he said he would. They're going to go kick your ass at 7-10 or whatever else, or in whatever else may be going on. If they trade Tim Anderson, who gets better and what happens? How does the clubhouse play out? Does everybody wish they were Tim Anderson, that he finally escaped what seems to be a very dysfunctional situation? Or does this benefit people? What are the residual effects of that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that, you know, the front office of the White Sox have been dealing with this for a year and a half. This is a team that's played under 500 since the middle of 2021. Okay, that even when they went to the playoffs in 2021, the second half of the season they were below 500. They've been below 500 since then. So this isn't just a Tim Anderson situation coming up now. It's more of a team trying to find itself and its identity since then, and it just hasn't been there. Last year, never more than five games over 500, never more than five games under 500. A 500 team, that's what they were. This year, it's just all about the fact that they seem to lack some leadership on the field. People give Grafal and the coaching staff a slide because they're new to the team. They're still getting to know their players. They're still getting to know what they can expect from those people. Obviously, the 26-man roster hasn't gotten it done. It's changed quite a bit since opening day. You're seeing names in the lineup that you've never heard before, and some of them are decent players. But it's obvious that it's a team in search of some leaders on the team right now, and it's just not there. There's some pitchers on the team that are leaders. There's some position players that have been leaders in the past, like Andres, who's not having a great year this year. It's lacking leadership. It's lacking function on offense, and it's just something that needs a change. And I think by the 1st of August, when the trade deadline comes and goes, I think you'll see some different players on the south side. I don't think they'll just sit on what they have there. There's some good players that can help other teams. If you have the thought process that you want to trade Eloy Jimenez to a team like Arizona or Miami, who are contending and look like possible National League champions if you can get move Atlanta out of the way. You might be able to get some young pitching back that can help you not only this year, but certainly down the road here when your entire pitching staff going forward is up in the air.
All right. Well, the never-ending story.
Yes.
Chicago trade rumors. Bruce, really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Have a great holiday.
See you, Bruce. Too. Thank you.
That's Bruce Levine, baseball guru. Hear him Saturdays 9 to 11 on Inside the Clubhouse. Last Saturday with my co-host, Mike Esposito.
I was glad to fill in while David Haw was off. He will be back, not next week. Ranger is doing this coming Saturday because David has off all of this week. He'll be back the following Saturday.
Chris Ranger
will be on Inside the Clubhouse this coming Saturday because I will be on vacation this week. So we have an exciting family vacation wrapped around a travel baseball tournament in Tennessee, in the Smoky Mountains.
Where in Tennessee?
Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Right there.
Is that near Dolly?
It's yes. Dollywood is right there. Smoky Mountains are right there.
Pigeon Forge.
The Ripken Baseball
Experience.
Usually
it's a holler. With country music singers, they're from a holler.
It's actually really cool. The Ripken family they own these baseball complexes around the country. There's like four or five of them. Ripken Baseball Experience. It's a huge baseball complex, and they host teams from around the country for these travel baseball tournaments. And our 11U team that I help coach will be playing in one of them. We leave Saturday. The tournament starts, welcome is Sunday, and then the games start on Monday next week. So,
well, that sure beats Kenosha, where we went on our travel tournament.
It'll be fun. We're going to have a good time. It's our first time traveling. Again, our team is 11-year-olds, so we'll be fun. We'll have a
Pigeon
good time.
Forge, right near a holler. Yeah.
Yee-hoo.
All right, well, safe travel. Good luck on that. Before you go, though, we're going to play a game.
I'm excited for this. I don't know anything about this.
Talking about you do not. You do not. I'm not going to tip you off and let you use the Google machine. No. We're going to come back with a game because I'll just tell you, it's all-star related.
Okay.
So we're going to play a game with Mike Esposito. I'm Steve Rosenblum in for Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. We're in for Mully and Haw today, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, taking you up to 11 o'clock. That point will be marked. Grody. Actually, Mark's going to be here. We'll do a little transition around 10:40 or so. It's not his show, but it'll be on this show.
He used to be on the show. Yeah.
And we've got a whole bunch of people, texters, thinking it's Saturday Suckage on Tuesday. Star Spangled Suckage is a 224 texter said. And Mark will take you up to the Cubs game. Today, the Cubs continue their series against the Brewers. Pregame, 235, with first pitch at 310 on the score. And the Infinity Cubs Radio Network.
Xfinity.
Also, did you know you can hear Cubs games on your smart speaker? Just tell your device to play 670 The Score.
It is the Xfinity Cubs Radio Network. We are excited about it.
Yep. So, this week, not much for All-Star games, but this sort of, this brought up something I needed you and I to talk about. We're going to play a game. Josh Jung, Corbin Carroll, two rookies.
Yep.
Texas, Arizona.
Yep.
They will be starters in the All-Star game for their respective leagues.
Mm-hmm.
They will be the second duo of rookies to start the All-Star game. Second duo ever. Since Kosuke Fukudome and Giovanni Soto.
Oh, my goodness.
In 2008.
2008.
I'm surprised to find that out now. The Braves had eight players.
The Braves
named
are
the
amazing.
The Braves,
yep.
This year's Braves.
Mm-hmm.
Eight All-Stars. That tied the 43 Cardinals, 56 Reds, the 1960 Pirates, and the 2008 Cubs. I do not remember that either, because I just think All-Star games are just silly.
Uh-huh.
Name them. Let's play a game, Mike.
All
Esposito.
Right.
Eight Cubs All-Stars. I already gave you
eight.
Two. The two rookies.
And those only, are two I would not have gotten. So
I,
there
see,
you go.
See, I gave you the hard ones. Kosuke Fukudome. And he was in the middle of the slide into oblivion because he went from April and everything, and he sucked. And that's where Suzuki was headed last year.
That had to be the fan
Thank
vote.
Thank God he got hurt last year, Suzuki did. So he didn't devolve into Kosuke-hood. So I gave you Kosuke.
Uh-huh.
And Giovanni Soto.
D-Lee has to be.
No.
Derek Lee is a no?
No.
What?
No! I say no. 8 Cubs All-Stars in 2008.
Aramis?
Yes. Aramis Ramirez, third base.
How about Kerry Wood?
Yes! I never thought you would get that one.
I told you. Yeah.
Yes.
Complete guess.
All right. Aramis, Kosuke, Giovanni, Woody. That's half. You're halfway home.
Carlos Zambrano.
Yes. Carlos Zambrano.
I'm trying to think of my 2008 Cubs.
Yeah, I know. I was just thrown off by this and going, oh my God, is this really, could this really be, this is true?
Dempster?
Yes. Well, I never thought you'd do that. I never thought you would do the Dempster.
I literally got
do the Dempster.
All right. Well, better question was he a starter or a closer that year? I think he was a starter that year, right?
He was a pitcher.
he pitched. Oh man.
Wasn't Woody the closer? Wasn't Kerry Wood the closer that year?
I can't remember. You know, this is where I'd have to go back and look at my Cubs statistics and see, because they were both starters that they made closers. I just can't remember when all of that happened.
Mm-hmm. So you got two more to go.
You got two more to go.
Well, I gave you two. You got four. You got two more to go. 2008 Cubs All-Stars. Because they had the most All-Stars, they tied for the most NL All-Stars.
Oh, Soriano.
Very nice.
I'm trying to think. I'm like, who are their outfielders? All right, Soriano.
Yep. So that'll leave you one more.
Can I phone a friend? I'd like to phone Bruce Levine.
Yeah, that would be good. We can do that. Yeah.
Can you phone
Ben Pope of the Sun-Times. He'll be on at 9. Ben Pope covers the Blackhawks. So the Pope will be talking about a hockey Jesus, Connor Bedard. You might know.
Is it a pitcher or a position player?
I'm sorry. We're done with this.
Is that like a 50-50? Isn't that one of the categories or one of the things I could do on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
You can pull the audience.
Yes.
It's Caesar.
All right. Caesar?
It's Caesar.
Caesar, how do you feel about the 2008 Cubs?
I can't remember if a reliever from that team besides Woody made that team. Was there two relievers on that All-Star team?
That's no way, right? Was it another starter? Was it another starter?
The list of All-Stars.
Wait a second. Ted Lilly?
No. Although Ted Lilly had a, wasn't it 2008 was the famous glove throwing expedition in the against Arizona? Hmm. Arizona, take off your rainbow.
I mean, there's no way that many Cubs position players made an All-Star team.
Cubs at 2008 Cubs. Lou's group, look at that, before Lou just choked everything away.
If you're giving a lifeline, I am.
My phone a friend.
No,
come on in.
Stop it. It's for him. Okay, what?
Did Mark DeRosa make the All-Star team that year?
He did not.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wow, did you screw up choosing him to phone a friend or
that's it.
Pull the audience?
Caesar,
or whatever.
we just lost $500,000.
Carlos Marmol.
Carlos Marmol. Yep. And it was another relief pitcher. See, Caesar had it. I did not.
Yep. That was 2008 Cubs. 8 All-Stars. And until this year, the only two rookies to start. Or only two rookies to start.
The funny
Kosuke Fukudome, who sucked. And Giovanni Soto. And the Cubs had 8. I mean, that was a year they would win a second straight division, and then they would just
implode,
face plant in the playoffs. And
yep.
And Lou is just
Now look.
Right. And that was 2008. Wasn't that Ted Lilly throwing his glove on the ground after giving up the bomb?
That was. I mean, nothing's going to top 2003, right? But
no.
Those playoffs, I remember because you're right. The Cubs were, I don't know if they were wire to wire exactly, but they were.
Which ones?
In 2008, in terms of winning the division and, you know, playoff team.
Yeah, they were coming off 2007.
They were great. They played a great. I know that they got swept by Arizona, and it was one of the most disappointing because you expected so much more. And then by the end of that series against Arizona, I want to say Zambrano pitched. Wasn't it something like where he pulled Zambrano from the first game?
Game one.
Yeah.
Lou, the genius,
now look,
who didn't want to be questioned, pulled Zambrano 6 innings of a tie game. It was 1-1, 6 innings. Yeah, that's enough, Carlos. We're going to get you ready for game four.
Which
they still haven't played game four.
No, they haven't played game four.
And you couldn't win the game in front of you. That's the most rookie mistake thing ever. That's plain stupid is what that is.
Nothing will top 2003, the Marlins, whatever you want to call that. But losing that, getting
Marlins. So you know what? We should call Kerry Wood and see how he compares 2003, 2008.
Yikes. The funny thing is, if you had given me that list and not given me Fukudome and Soto, I would have never in a million years gotten them. And I'm like, listen, I've been a Cubs fan since birth. I get to cover the team. I've worked, you know, for many years covering the team.
I would have
never gotten those guys as all-stars. Certainly not Fukudome. I might have gotten Soto at as I thought about it, but I would have never have guessed that Fukudome was an all-star that year.
2008 also was the year of the White Sox back when Ozzie was manager. You know what? Ozzie,
that's right.
Ozzie should still be here, and the chairman and Kenny and Rick Hahn should be gone. Because if you look at it, Ozzie was the one who did his job better than those guys.
Are we allowed to do that?
Well, I'm just saying that Ozzie would do his job better than those guys are. We've seen Rick Hahn just set fire to this. It's a dumpster fire. Kenny's in charge of being the guy in charge of setting the dumpster fire, and the chairman doesn't do anything except jam the wrong manager down everybody's throat. Ozzie would have been the right manager. Do you think Ozzie is going to put up with the crap that you've seen from these players?
No.
Well, this manager is, this general manager is, this team president is.
That's the frustrating thing, and you know, we heard it in the Ken Rosenthal bite from inside the clubhouse that Caesar played earlier. At the time they made these trades, meaning the White Sox, when they traded Chris Sale, when they traded Adam Eaton, when they were doing their teardown, everyone thought they got the right guys, right? Yoan Moncada was the top prospect in baseball. You know, Lucas Giolito at the time was one of the top prospects in baseball. You got guys you were supposed to get. Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease for Jose Quintana. I mean,
right. And nobody's healthy. All right, so that 2008 White Sox, before we go, we're going to take a break, and we've got to get to Bulls gossip, which is far more interesting than Bulls news, but we'll get to that. The White Sox would lose to Joe Maddon's Rays, and the Rays would go to the World Series, right? And they won one game in that series, and they had two, by this list I have here, two All-Stars.
In 2008, Burley?
You see, he should be on this list, but he's not.
Bobby Jinks?
He should be. No. He was probably out of baseball by then.
I'm trying to remember back. Jim Thome?
No. Wow. You're more clueless with them than you are with the Cubs, aren't
Jermaine
you?
Jermaine Dye. Joe Creedy.
You're talking about 2000. Joe Creedy's right.
Is it?
Yeah. That's one of two. I need one more White Sox player.
2008.
Joe Creedy's right.
Esteban Loaiza was too old.
He was already in jail, dealing drugs or whatever he was doing.
That's right.
Yeah, he was Narcos. Esteban Narcos. Well, that's what we need. We need season three of Narcos or Breaking Bad with Esteban Loaiza.
Gus Fring. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Canerco?
By the way,
my Heisenberg hat.
Yeah, you've got it.
I got my Heisenberg hat.
Yes, you do.
For those of you watching on Twitch, and we're not, okay, I'll give it to you. Carlos
Quinton.
Yeah.
That was his miracle year. Right.
And I I assume he got hit by a pitch just during the introduction of the players as they lined up on the bases.
That was the year when he came out of literally nowhere from Arizona and hit, like, what, 35 home runs or something
Arizona,
like that.
Arizona, take off your rainbow shades. Okay, that's it. That's our game, and that's our...
I like that. Thank you.
We have a game next hour. We're going to play Make Believe with Mike Esposito. I'm serious about this. We have another game.
Okay.
Another sport, another game with Mike Esposito. But next... Bulls gossip is just so much more interesting than Bulls news. We'll tell you. We'll show you. Get your popcorn ready. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, in for Mullane Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
For fans who might look at the situation and be disappointed that you didn't, that you stood pat at the deadline and that you didn't make a big trade, you know, leading into the, you know, involving draft night, what's your message to that segment of the fan base?
Well, I think we made a move in the draft. I know it's a disappointment it's not in the first round, but we did. But they will have to wait until, I think, until the free agency and to see what we look like after that.
I told you Bulls news was not nearly as interesting as Bulls gossip. There's the ever-excitable Arturis Karnishevas talking about wait till free agency. Okay, so there's Javon Carter, and they drafted a guy who can't shoot, and then they signed another guy you've never heard of, and they're still relying on the big three, and none of the big three could hit a three in the most important minutes of the most important game of the year. Oh, boy. So that's why we're doing Bulls Gossip. Welcome in. Welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito with you. We're in for Mullane Haw today on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, if you're listening to us, there's many ways to listen. And our listener line.
Our listener line is the Busey Bank Score Hotline. Building business, growing wealth since 1868.
312-644-6767 is the number. Get you to our phones, to our text line. So... it was quite the headline that I saw on NBC Sports Chicago. The headline was, Michael Jordan speaks out on son's romance with Larsa Pippen. Oh, wow. Get your popcorn ready, huh?
I'm ready.
Right?
I have not read this.
Look at that. Okay, see? I told you Bulls gossip was much more interesting than Bulls news, right?
I'm ready for it.
Here are the first three paragraphs of that piece.
Okay.
Michael Jordan has weighed in on his son Marcus Jordan's romance with Scottie Pippen's famous ex-wife. The NBA legend was spotted leaving dinner at Matignon in Paris on Sunday when a paparazzi asked if he approved of Marcus dating the Bravo reality star, who was married to his former Bulls teammate for 19 years. No, Jordan yelled before climbing into his vehicle.
Okay, then.
No.
No.
I guess no is speaking out. If he yelled it, that's speaking out. I kind of thought there'd be more to it. No.
Nope.
However, the part just saying no contradicts what Larsa herself said. She claimed a few months ago that she was on the Tamron Hall show in February. Quote, I've recently been hanging out with his parents. So whatever combination that is. But I really don't want to talk about them. I feel like it's not about my parents or his parents. They're all happy. Our whole family's fine. I feel like it's more about where I am and where he is. I feel like we're in a great place. We motivate each other. We're really happy being together, and I feel like that's the most important thing. No! That's what Jordan said. Michael Jordan said no. Ah. Larsa is 48.
Cradle Robin.
And Marcus is 32.
Mm-hmm.
Larsa separated from Scotty in 2016, finalized her divorce in 2022, and, you know, less than a year later, rumors of the romance began. The couple confirmed their relationship on an Instagram post in January, as one does.
Because it has to be Instagram official.
Yeah. You have to have a Larsagram and a Marcusgram and a Jordan.
That's right. Now, I know I am the oddball here in our modern Instagram world, but I know Larsa because she was married to Pippen. I have no idea what show she's on, and I've never watched it, and I didn't know she was a reality star of whatever. I thought.
I assume it's the Real Housewives of Miami.
It's the Real Housewives of something. I think you're right. But I've never in a, I would have not, if you asked me, like if you said, do you know who this is? I was sure. She was Pippen's wife. Yeah. I did not know she was in, well, is she an actress or is she a reality? We'll call her a reality star. How's that?
She's an ex-wife of some note, apparently.
Yes.
And a serial dater of Michael Jordan's son.
What do, and this is an honest question. What does Marcus Jordan, like what do the Jordan kids do? What are any of them?
They date Larsa.
Doing? I mean, I know they don't have to do anything, right? I'm sure they have plenty of money. But like, is Marcus a, what is he? Like, is he a botanist? Is he a, like, does he make movies?
He's a florist, like Dion O'Banion, who ran into a bad St. Valentine's Day one time. Uh-huh. All right, so that was part of it. And that was the Jordan Pippen portion of the program.
Okay.
The Bulls gossip. Now, here's something that cropped up just recently. According to California Real Estate Listings, Zach LaVine reportedly bought the most expensive home in Pelican Crest, California. I don't know if you've ever heard of Pelican Crest.
I'm Googling it right now.
It is the biggest money part of one of the biggest money areas in Southern California. It is behind the Orange Curtain. It's in Newport Beach.
Yep.
Bring money and then bring more money and then bring more money.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's right there.
It has a gated driveway. It has a gated walkway. If you look at pictures of this home in Pelican Crest, it reminds me of Harry Waltz's, it reminds me of where the horse's head woke up.
Godfather. Uh-huh.
Yeah. The horse's head was found in a bed, bleeding all over, Waltz Productions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this place looks like that Zach LaVine reportedly bought.
Did he make him an offer that they couldn't refuse?
Well, at $34 million, say that somebody said sold. Somebody said deal. And I believe, I don't know how long this has been going on, but I believe that Zach LaVine was scouting properties in the last 8 minutes of the game against Miami. He sure as hell didn't make a basket that anyone cared about.
I wonder how close he came to buying in Florida then, because he was right down there.
Yeah, well, they asked him who his daddy was, and he said the Miami Heat.
Wow.
Anyways, $34 million for a place in Pelican Crest, which sounds like it would have been an old ABC.
Yeah, Falcon's Crest.
Yeah, and $34 million. He certainly got the cash. He hasn't. Yeah. He's had a lot of extra time to spend there now.
Yeah.
I don't know all the
particulars. Don't have to worry about April or May. Or
no,
June.
No.
You got plenty of time.
You're free. You're free when that happens. And, you know, it just the whole, the clown show that AK put on about claiming that the Vucevic trade, which ended this year when Jet Howard, Juwan's kid, was drafted, said, yeah, I think it worked out well for us. Really?
What?
You missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. You have one playoff victory to show for a franchise that has six NBA titles. And you trade, even if you'd have made that Vooch for Wendell Carter, Wendell Carter Jr., right? Make that thing straight up. You could still argue the Bulls lost that. I mean, Vooch is supposed to come here, be an outside big man who could shoot from the outside. He sucked from the outside. He got worse. Oh, my God. And now AK is remaking this team. He gets to keep his job. AK is Lithuanian for Rick Hahn. Okay, we're going to take a break. We come back. When we come back, we're going to talk about Connor Bedard with Ben Pope of the Sun-Times. Yes, the Pope on Hockey Jesus. Who's he going to play with? How's this kid going to adapt to Chicago? Regina to Chicago is a big change right there. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Who are you? Who are you again? Mike
Esposito. Nice to meet you.
Okay.
Eric Stratton, Rush Chairman.
Damn glad to meet you. Chicago's more. By the way, we will do a movie thing.
Oh, I'm excited.
We will do this. A movie anniversary. We'll do that next hour as well. And we got another game to play with Espo. But first, Pucks! Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.